Okay, put Madam Honourable Member. The department. And there are the delegations and every one present here. First, before we go to apologies, let me apologize for the many confusion that happened about. I'm made aware that the notice or the letter said 9:30. But our notice said 9:00. Let's just bear with us. It was an error. How it happened, we'll look at it later on. But also, I know this is not our field. Yesterday, listening to the crime stats, I just couldn't believe that in 1 year, not because of natural causes or any other reasons for death, we have got victims of crime who passed on that at more than 21,000. That is quite shocking. But two strange things or areas of highlight is that of the 14 highest number, 10 are only in one city, in Cape Town. But the strangest of them all is that of that 14, there is a place that I never thought it could have such high crime rate. That is Lusikisi. And when I looked at the turnover, population-wise, I am of the view that if it was not numbers, it was per population, Lusikisi would have been number one. If I'm not mistaken, at 129. Now, when there is a rural place like that one, where in a year people can just be killed 229. You must just know that in average, it will be a person who has been killed. And I hope that down the line we'll be able, unfortunately, as I said, it doesn't fall directly on our committee. But it might be, maybe, DJ will help us to just go and check on those deaths, how related they are. When we deal with the issue of illegal mining at some point, we don't know whether those deaths include or are those incidences are recorded that we see, that we hear. But I'm quite convinced that if that was the case, one of the areas that would have had such high numbers would have been in the Free State in Velkom. So that's why I said my interest was whether those numbers include such incidents of illegal mining by records. So we'll have to look at some of those issues going forward and where we, if it relates to us, be able to see where we can we address the weakness. Today, honorable members and everyone, we have invited the department to lead us on the issue of the court cases in front of it, that the department is confronted with, and subsequently we'll also deal with the legislative framework. And having said so, are there any apologies?
Good morning, members and the guests. I've got apologies from Ms. M. Kinjani. Thank you.
Morning, Chair. Just to remind you, I did ask to be excused this morning at 10. Thank you so much.
Okay, I know that there is an apology from the Deputy Minister. He did talk to me. I think it's flying out. I don't know where. I forgot when, but it did. DG? You are DG, you will decide. When I say DG, I know this is the richest department, it has not two teachers.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me take this opportunity to convey our own greetings to honorable members and also the DG Zulu and the colleagues and our media in attendance as well as our parliamentary staff. Chair, we have an apology from the Honourable Minister as well, that he has been having a long-standing engagements in Pretoria with the stakeholders, and it is on the basis of that that he would not be able to be part of this meeting. Chair, we are going to proceed with the two presentations in the following order. I will start with the court cases or court judgments. Then DGs will deal with the legislative framework. We have the officials from the department that are here as support staff. We will deal with all the questions together with our teams that are here in attendance this morning. I would like to move straight to the second slide, which is context on handling litigations. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this slide because suffice it to say that we work with the state attorney and all the cases of the department are handled by the state attorney, that brings the counsel. Looking at the scope of the litigations, the presentation under energy will cover judgments directly affecting the Department of Energy, which is now Mineral Resources and Energy, effectively from the 1st of January 2018 to date. As you know, honorable members, Chair, that when you are dealing with court cases, we understand clearly that we are here to account as a department. As you know that, you know, when the matters are still in progress in court, there is, you know, a way in which those matters must be handled. And so we would not get into the details of the matters, but it is important for members to get information of what is happening because those matters are still sub judice. We have 9 judgments under energy, because just take note that we are dealing with energy and mineral resources. Now, under energy, we have 9 cases. And now the presentation would touch or highlight the certain aspects of the judgments, and also to make sure that we give a brief explanation in terms of where we are to date. I'll move to the fifth slide. There we just indicate the number of cases as well that we'll be dealing with and what are those cases. I would not get into the details because the information is contained in the presentation. I'll just zoom straight to the cases. On slide number 7, the first court case is Fenerama, a case in which here the certain issues that had to be adjudicated upon was whether internal appeal suspends the operation of site and retail license issued by the controller. Applicants were afforded the opportunity to object to site and retail licenses, and also in this case applicants were entitled or whether they're entitled to interdict. Now, the judgment was delivered on the 21st of June 2018 by the Northwest Division of the High Court, and so the application was dismissed, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Now, the findings of the court were that an internal appeal does not suspend the operation of the site and retail licenses issued. The fact that the applicants did not see the notices of the site and retail applications does not mean that it was not afforded an opportunity to object, and it was further decided that the requirements for an interdict were not complied with. And the matter is now in July 2018, an application for leave to appeal was filed, and to date we are still waiting, there are no developments. And we have since moved, the internal appeals were finalized, and new service station has commenced operation. The second matter, that is slide number 8, is Kumlani. It is in respect of the matter of Mr. Zwani, where he challenged the decision of the minister to dismiss him from the board of NEXA. Application was dismissed with cause by the High Court. His application his application for leave to appeal was also dismissed with cause by the High Court and also the Supreme Court of Appeal, and the applicant decided to approach the Constitutional Court as well, and the application was also dismissed by the Constitutional Court because it was found that there were no prospects of success. And the person in question, or Mr. Zwani, has since been successfully brought, an application was brought by CIPC to be declared a delinquent director in terms of the Companies Act. The next case is Mahamoni Rose. Here, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, the issue here is whether the approval of site and retail licenses have lapsed or rendered invalid for non-compliance with certain suspensive conditions. Here, the controller refused to issue licenses that were granted in 2013 as, in his view, the approval has lapsed. Now, the judgment was delivered on the 10th of October 2018 in the KwaZulu-Natal Division of the High Court in Pietermaritzburg. Here, the court held that the approvals had not lapsed and ordered the controller to provide a list of all outstanding requirements to applicants for their submission. The court further found that the regulations cannot be interpreted such that an approval would automatically lapse with the infliction of time. The controller must afford the applicant a fair opportunity to comply before reviewing approval decision. And so the status as of now is that the controller received the documentation from the applicants and issued licenses on or about the 15th of January 2019. The fourth matter on slide number 10 is the petrol site. Here it is also about the petrol regulation. Now, issues were whether the first respondent commenced with retailing activities within the time period prescribed in Regulation 24. Applicants sought to interdict the first respondent from developing and retailing on the site. Now, the judgment was issued or delivered on the 20th of December 2018 by the Gauteng Division of the High Court in Pretoria. In this case, the application was dismissed with cause, and the court found that a proof of purchase from wholesaler and sale to end consumer suffices as proof of commencement of retailing activities. The site is currently in operation. The next case is the case of Sabi and Resilient. Here, the two separate applications by the applicants, who are end users and ratepayers in good standing, were held together to review decisions by ESCOM to terminate or interrupt bulk supply of electricity to Tabachu local municipality and Emalahleni municipality for non-payment. Here the minister decided as an interested party, but no relief seen so directly against or from the minister. The judgment was granted on the 7th of March 2019 by a Gauteng Division of the High Court in Pretoria. Now, it was found that the decision of ESCOM to schedule interrupted electricity was set aside, and the respondents were ordered to pay costs. Now, the court made the following findings: that ESCOM is empowered in terms of Section 21, Subsection 5 of the Electricity Regulation Act 4 of 2000 to terminate or to interrupt supply of electricity. The two governmental institutions of state were working against each other, which is actually contrary to Section 41 of the Constitution that requires that they must cooperate, work in good faith, and with mutual trust to ensure the settling of intergovernmental disputes. And now, it was also found that ESCOM failed to exhaust alternative remedies and procedures in terms of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, and thus reviewed and set aside decision of ESCOM to interrupt the bulk electricity supply. On the 23rd of May 2019, ESCOM was granted a leave to appeal against a portion of the judgment. Appeal is actually noted to the Supreme Court of Appeal. That was on the 18th of June 2019. As a very investment, the matter is also in respect of the petroleum regulation. Here, it was actually the issue is whether the controller, in refusing the license, acted reasonably and rationally. Now, on the 8th of March 2019, the Gauteng Division of the High Court in Pretoria ordered the minister to re-evaluate the applicant's appeal. Now, the court made the following findings. The controller does not defer to the local authority on the determination of need and desirability. The controller does not look at NPV in isolation. However, it was also highlighted that the minister failed to take into account certain relevant information that should have that should have, including updated mall figures, increase in building plans, or impact or value of the positioning of the proposed site in relation to volumes. Now, the matter is still under consideration by the minister. The next matter, which is on slide number 13, is Soriso. And so here also the matter is about the petroleum regulation. In October 2017, the Grahamstown High Court dismissed with cause an application by Soriso to review the decision of the minister to refuse to issue site and retail licenses, an application for leave to appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal or full bench was refused by the High Court. Applicants then petitioned the Supreme Court of Appeal, but on the 19th of March 2019, SCA dismissed the application with cause. Now, the court found that there was actually no reasonable prospects of success in an appeal and no other compelling reason to hear an appeal, costs to be taxed and recovered from the applicant. The second last matter under energy, it is on Coal Transporters Forum. Here, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, the Coal Transporters Forum brought an application to interdict Eskom from signing PPAs with successful IPPs until the NERSA has taken certain decisions or declared those PPAs already signed null and void. Applicants considered that if NERSA had in fact taken the decisions, this application must fail. An urgent application was launched by Transform RSA, NPC, and NUMSA for leave to join in the Coal Transporters Forum application as core applicants and for an order interdicting the intended signing and conclusions of the said IPPs pending the outcome of the main application. Metals was opposed and struck off the roll for lack of agency with costs, and the application, as I said, was dismissed with cause by the Gauteng Division of the High Court in Pretoria. Now, the court held that all parties, including NERSA, Eskom, and IPPs, testified that NERSA had taken all decisions in question, and applicants offered no evidence to the contrary and carried the burden of establishing its entitlement to the relief it seeks. Application or applicants brought an application for leave to appeal, which was dismissed by the High Court. Applicants now approaching SCA for leave to appeal. The last matter is a matter of Kevin Richard, and here it is about the three former board members of NEXA, including CEO, they both brought an urgent application against the minister and others to review and set aside the decisions of the minister to remove them as the directors and also to suspend the CEO. The urgent application was struck from the roll for lack of agency in January 2019 and heard in June 2019. Now, the application by the CEO was dismissed. The decision by Minister to remove the first and third applicants on the 4th of December 2018 was reviewed, declared unlawful, and it was also set aside. And here each party is ordered to pay its own cost. Now, in terms of the findings of the court, the court found that the minister had every right to be concerned upon the areas of non-compliance with their responsibilities by the directors, but found that the minister failed to comply with the procedural requirements in terms of Section 71 of the Companies Act, read with the requirement of procedural fairness as contained in Section 3 of PACHA when he removed them. The court also found that the decision by the minister to terminate the directorship of the applicant constitutes administrative as opposed to executive action. Since the case was overtaken by the events, namely that the term of office of the directors has lapsed, and the court did not order their reinstatement or any compensation. Now, the board or the new board appointments were not affected by the judgment, but then the CEO remains dismissed, and each party was ordered to pay its cost. I would now move to the second part of the presentation, which is the Mineral Resources Department. I would just move straight or directly to the cases. The first case under Mineral Resources is the Chamber of Mines and Scores against the Department. Both applicants sought orders to perpetuate the benefit of continuing consequences of a previous empowerment deals throughout the life of mine, and to further seek declaratory orders as to the legal status of the 2004 and the reviewed 2010 mining charter. In March 2018, the High Court held in favor of the Mineral Council of South Africa, which was known as the Chamber, and it found that the once empowered, always empowered principle to be applicable. It also noted that the charter is not legally enforceable to the extent that the MPRDA's enforcement measures cannot be invoked upon non-compliance. The DMR applied for leave to appeal, and the application for leave to appeal is still pending. Meanwhile, Scholes attempted to consolidate his matter with the council application, but it failed, and he was further ordered to join all relevant parties in his matter, which the court held to be different and separate from the MCSA matter. Both the council appeal and Scholes declaration remain pending. The next matter is the matter of Maledi and others versus Itireli Bakhaza Mineral Resources. Here, IBMR, which is the holder of the mining right on certain land in Northwest Province, entered into a surface lease agreement with a community following a tribal council resolution. When mining was about to commence, certain members of community felt aggrieved about the loss of their land and refused access to the company. IBMR successfully applied for an eviction order in the High Court. The Constitutional Court, this matter was taken to the Constitutional Court, and the Constitutional Court set the eviction order aside and held that IBMR should have exhausted the provisions of Section 54 of the MPRDA to resolve the dispute. The court, however, did not set the mining right aside, but held that both rights enjoy statutory protection. Here, Honorable Chair and all members, it demonstrates that Section 54 of the MPRDA plays an important role in balancing the interests of landowners and lawful occupiers and mining right holders. The next matter is the matter of Judicile Baleni and others, that is DMR. This is a Tolobeni matter. During 2016, the applicant instituted legal proceedings in the Gauteng High Court in Pretoria. Applicant sought declaratory orders to the effect that the Minister of Mineral Resources is not permitted to grant mining rights in respect of tribal land without consent of a tribal authority. The court held that the minister lacks authority to grant a mining right unless the state had complied with EPILRA. The court also held that in terms of EPILRA, the minister is obliged to obtain the full and informed consent of the applicants and Umbulofu community as the holder of rights in land prior to granting any mining right to the company. The matter is currently on appeal. Excuse me. I think the Honourable Chair will remember there is one point or two issues that I just want to clarify on this case. Why then the department decided to appeal this court judgment? We are having two pieces of legislation here, which is EPILRA and MPRDA. The Department of Mineral Resources and Energy is responsible for the administration of MPRDA. Now, we are trying to ascertain as to whether EPILRA can trump on MPRDA, because we believe that in terms of the requirements of MPRDA, when we apply, you have to consult meaningfully. And so that is our position as a department. Now, this is what we are seeking from, you know, seeking clarity from the courts as we are appealing this matter. And when you look at the body of the judgment, we are quite fine with the body of the judgment as a department. The only issue that we are appealing is the consent that we have to obtain, or mining companies have to obtain, whenever they envisage to mine. We have another matter of Mabula Protected Environment, which was against the Department of the then DIA and DMR and the relevant MEC in Mpumalanga to allow other Africa Ventures to mine the coal in Mabula Protected Environment area. A permission was granted jointly by ministers of DMR, the then DMR and DIA, and was set aside by the High Court on the 8th of November 2018. The court held that the ministers did not consult with interested and affected parties as provided for by the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. The court remitted the matter to the ministers to follow a process compliant with PASHA, and DMR and DIA have both abided by the decision of the court. Aquina and versus Ziza. The matter relates to dispute between Aquila, Ziza and its successor, which is called the PEMDEC, regarding overlapping prospecting rights in Northern Cape. Ziza applied for conversion of its unused older rights in 2005 and was granted in 2008. Meanwhile, Aquila applied afterwards, but was granted a prospecting right before 2008, albeit it was second in line. The High Court ruled in favor of Aquila and found that Ziza application was defective and should have been refused. In 2017, the Supreme Court of Appeal overturned this decision in favor of Ziza and ruled that Aquila application could not have been granted whilst the Ziza application was pending. The Constitutional Court held in favor of Aquila and confirmed the High Court judgment. The court confirmed the granting of mining rights to Aquila, and the department is currently busy processing this application as per the court judgment. The other matter is a matter of Mining Forum of South Africa. During the course of 2018, MFSA instituted legal proceedings in the High Court against, amongst others, the Lonmin and the Minister of Mineral Resources. MFSA among others, sought an order declaring that the minister has acted in breach of his statutory obligations under the Constitution by failing to act against Lonmin for its failure to implement its social and labor plans. The court held that the applicant ought to have brought its challenge under the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, not the Constitution. The application was dismissed with cause. The other matter is the matter of Rhino Oil and Gas Exploration versus Normandian Funds. The applicant challenged the validity of the acceptance of an exploration right application in terms of MPRDA. The Western Cape High Court set aside the acceptance decision and held that certain material procedures were not adhered to or followed. The Supreme Court of Appeal overturned the judgment of the High Court and held that since there was not a prejudice to Normandian Funds, it could not ask for the acceptance decision to be set aside as the matter was not ripe for adjudication at that stage. Treasure the Karoo Action Group and then against the department. In reaction to public concerns about the hydraulic fracturing in South Africa, both applicants sought to review the petroleum exploration and production regulations that were promulgated in 2015, primarily on the basis that this promulgation was procedurally unfair and that the Minister of Mineral Resources, or the then Mineral Resources, does not have authority to promulgate the regulations under the MPRDA. Stern succeeded in the Eastern Cape High Court, but the TKAG's application was dismissed by the Gauteng High Court in Pretoria, where the latter found that the Minister of Mineral Resources was indeed authorized to promulgate the regulations and that its promulgation was rational. Both matters were consolidated and heard by the Supreme Court of Appeal. The SCA held in favor of Stern and TKAG and declared that the regulations were invalid due to lack of authority by the Minister of Mineral Resources to make the regulations under the MPRDA. The decision of courts has been abided with by the department. The next matter is a matter of the Somkele case. This is actually in the district of Tabisa in the province of KZN. The summary of the background of the appeal in litigation in the matter of Mfolosi Community Environmental Justice Organization against a mining right for coal granted in favor of Tendele Coal Mining in the district of Tabisa. An appeal was lodged by UNS attorneys on behalf of MCEJO on the 8th of September 2017. The grounds of appeal revolve around environmental issues and consultation. One of the grounds being that the expansion of the mining project into southwestern portion of the reserve would result in irreparable damage to the integrity of the Umfolozi wilderness areas that lies within the HIP. The regional manager in the region confirmed consultation and indicated that the application was accepted prior to the coming into effect of one environmental system. The RM further confirmed that consultation with relevant stakeholders in accordance with Section 40. Recommendations to confirm the grant were made to the minister. The minister confirmed that the grant of the mining rights based on the recommendation by the legal services was correct. Now the appellants proceeded with judicial review. The department opted to file a record in terms of Rule 56 of the High Court rules and not oppose the matter. A report has been filed and the matter is currently pending in court. The other matter, Honorable General Members, which is in the second last matter, is a matter of a steel port mining dispute. Here the matter involves Samanco Chrome. Samanco Chrome is involved in a number of criminal and civil cases involving chrome disputes. As you know, that area is quite volatile as far as the unrest are concerned, but we are trying to do everything in our power as well as the department to attend to those issues that emanate from the community members. In the civil matter, the minister's decision to grant Samanco mining rights is currently the subject of an appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal, and the matter is therefore still pending. And we also have the criminal matter that the department has been subpoenaed as a witness. The matter which relates to alleged illegal mining by community members and the validity of an alleged issued mining permit is currently sub judice, Honorable Chair, and we will come back to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources and Energy to give an update on this matter. And so we hope that we'll get a solution in dealing with all these matters. The last matter is the matter of Fleming Silver versus VGSA. On the 1st of November, I'm going to spend a bit of time on this one. I just want to clarify this point. I know that it's a matter that members have raised previously, and so we thought that it would be appropriate to provide members with sufficient information so that you can have a full understanding of all the issues, knowledge of all the issues that we had to deal with in respect of this matter. On the 1st of November 2017, Fleming Silver Trading and VGSA, which owned a controlling interest of the shares in Vantage Goldfields, issued share agreements in terms of which the mentioned shareholding will be purchased by Fleming Silver from VGSA pending certain conditions. There were various addendums to the sale of shares agreement, the last of which, the fourth addendum, indicated, among others, that the only outstanding condition of precedent was that of the regulator approval to be obtained from the Minister of Mineral Resources, and that the share certificates and other documents were to be transferred to Fleming Silver on the date of receipt by the seller of the minister's consent to Section 11 application against payment to the seller of the amount referred to. We don't really have the specific amount, but because it's a commercial transaction, there was an agreement in terms of the sale price and so forth. On the 21st of December 2018, the Director General of the then Department of Mineral Resources, as the delegate of the Minister of Minerals and Energy, gave consent for the transfer of the shares. The share certificate and other documents have to date not been transferred. And so we explained in the presentation in terms of the status. Then on the 8th of February 2019, Fleming Silver sends a letter of demand to VGSA to transfer the share certificate and other relevant documentation in respect of the transaction. On the 12th of February 2019, business leadership practitioners attorneys sent a letter to VGSA confirming that Fleming Silver has satisfactorily complied with the conditions precedent to their transaction. On the 14th of February 2019, Fleming Silver's attorneys, Faskin, sent a final letter of demand to VGSA, reiterating that, which is stated also in the letter of the 8th of February. On the 13th of March 2019, Notice of breach of sale of shares agreement sent by VGSA to Fleming Silver. Fleming Silver given 10 days to remedy alleged breaches. On the 14th of March 2019, Fleming Silver launches application in the High Court, Bombela, to compel VGSA to transfer share certificates and other relevant documentation in respect of the transaction. On the 22nd of March 2019, Rudy Penard, who was a shareholder in Fleming Silver, which was subsequent to this date dismissed from the board of because of the serious misconduct, filed an intervention application against Fleming Silver's application to compel, in which it is clearly indicated that he was in support of VGSA for the cancellation of sale of shares agreement. On the 26th of March 2019, VGSA sends cancellation letter to Fleming Silver, and on the 28th of March, again on in March 2019, VGSA filed answering affidavit to application to compel, which was initially due on the 22nd of March 2019 for the party to perform. Between March and May, various sets of papers filed by all parties. In May 2019, first court appearance, intervention application is heard by Justice Mpahlele, and the judgment was reserved. Then on the 7th of June 2019, judgment in respect of the intervention application is handed down. The application is dismissed with cause against Thursday Jepena. And on the 19th of June 2019, second court appearance here, Felipe Penard, in the morning of the court appearance, brings application to amend notice of motion in intervention application. Justice Mpahlele allows amendment and makes an order as to the timing of the filing of the supplementary papers. In July, on the 9th, third court appearance, matter appears before acting Justice Rulosa. Amendment of notice of motion is heard together with various other interlocutory applications as well as the merits of the main application. On the 17th of July 2019, judgment is handed down. Acting Justice Rulosa finds in favor of the amendment to the intervention application, which consequently disposes of the need for the main application to be heard. The merit of main application has to date not been heard. On the 26th of March 2019, application for leave to appeal the acting justice judgment was made, and on the 7th of July 2019 was brought by Fleming Silver. On the 2nd of August 2019, fourth court appearance, again application for leave to appeal to be heard. The matter appears before acting judge Luce. Judgment is reserved, and on the 6th of August 2019, judgment is handed down, and the acting justice Luce dismisses Fleming Silver's application for leave to appeal. 26 August 2019, Fleming Silver launches a petition to the Supreme Court of Appeal requesting leave to appeal the judgment of the 17th of July 2019, having already served the petition when the respondents in a matter inter alia VGSA and Ferriti Penal. This has the effect that the matter once again becomes sub judice. This means that the judgment of the 17th of July 2019 and 6th August 2019 is stayed pending, this application being heard in the SCA, and that the Fleming Silver's transaction is revived as a result of which VGSA cannot transact with any other party until such time as the matter has been adjudicated upon by the Supreme Court of Appeal. And so, honourable members, the reason why we thought that it would be important to consume quite a substantive amount of time in this matter is because of history on this matter, the issues that have been raised by honourable members and the portfolio committee. And so, because this involves a commercial transaction between the two companies, and now we are constrained as a department to intervene, because we must allow all the court processes to run their course, and it will be after that then that we can be able to intervene. And so we understand the magnitude of the issue that we are confronted with the Lili mine, but we will try where possible to engage parties, perhaps to even have out of court settlement. And so that's what we can do, so that the main issue, which is the retrieval of the container, can be done, because it can only be done if there is mining operations taking place at that area or at the mine. Lastly, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we just want to reflect on the other cases, especially the Baleni, Maledi, Sen and Mabula. And now we found that in terms of social and environmental issues, the cases have revealed the difficulties in finding the balance between mining, community and environmental interests. It's a matter that you are grappling with. Of course, we have to find a solution on this. Now, the other issue is in relation with consultation and identification of rightful community representatives whenever the problems are being raised, or when we get to be faced by problems. And so it is one of the issues that we are also looking into as the department. When you look at the case of Maledu, as I have indicated earlier, that it provides valuable guidance as to the importance of Section 54 as a mechanism to facilitate conflict resolution and negotiations between communities and mining companies. And now, when you look at all these litigations, they highlight the agent to adequately capacitate the DMR, which is the matter that we hard at work in ensuring that the DMR is fully capacitated to execute its mandate to transform and also to grow the mining sector. Honourable Chair and Members, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you very much for being patient for this long presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. First, let me say this. Those who watch football, they will know that there is a difference when you play at FNP Stadium and when you play at Mid Park. The proximity to the stadium is very close to the playing ground. But when you're at FNP, you are too far from the playing ground. So I don't want people not to whisper to each other, but the problem, the venue you are in, is too close is too congested or small to an extent. Honest conversation may even hear things we don't want to hear. So let's just understand that the venues are not the same. We are playing on a smaller ground now. Okay, honourable members, you may have your take. I'm trying honourable Blackwood or honourable Mailam, honourable Madinga, honourable Mashaude.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my concern, first of all, relates to primarily the Department of Energy, in that this briefing was on current and the terminology was a bit strange, current and possible court cases. That's what the description was of today's meeting. And I note that the Department of Mineral Resources has indicated what cases are currently outstanding, that they're waiting judgment on, etc., etc. However, there are two cases that I'm aware of in the Department of Energy where we are awaiting decisions that have not been included in here. And I refer specifically to the City of Cape Town versus Minister of Energy case relating to a municipality's right to purchase electricity from any provider. And then also the SFF court case. There's no reference to that in here either. So could I get an update on those two matters, and also whether there are any other cases that have not been referenced in this documentation that we should be aware of. Then, Chair, I guess the big question is, what has been learned by the department from these various court cases? What systems are being put in place to prevent recurrence of departmental failures? And I use that term advisedly because there are clear examples throughout here where the department has not acted according to the legislation or according to the regulation, and the court has found that. Chair, then if we could just for a second refer to the Baleni matter, and the DG rightly asks, does IPILRA trump MPRDA? And I think the answer would have to be no. You have to seek a way that utilizes or that the two pieces of legislation work in conjunction with each other. So you can't say, well, one is more important than the other, or unless there's a specific clause of repeal or a specific clause that says that in certain circumstances this piece of legislation is more important than that piece of legislation. They have equal stature before the law. That's how legislation works. So I guess the point is that you as a department have to look at the two pieces of legislation. And for that matter, you know, the traditional Leadership Governance Framework Act, the Traditional and Khoisan Leadership Bill, which is due to be signed any day, in fact it hasn't already been signed, which then specifies who has to take any decision relating to community assets. And it says that the entire community must be involved in that process, and it specifies how that process must be followed. But you as a department need to go and look at how that legislation impacts on you. I then want to just refer very briefly to the Mabola case. And I'd like some indication of the relevance of that matter to the Manzolwande case. I realize it's not before the court at the moment, but the Manzolwande investments mining rights application in Mala, and to ask whether in such areas where there are these protected areas or environmentally sensitive areas or whatever, the department takes a higher standard of care. Do you look at this through the same eyes as every other application, or do you say, well, because it's a protected area, because it's an environmentally sensitive area, we have to take greater care in what we do? My last question, Chair, relates to the Stern and Treasure the Karoo Action Group case. I note that the decision of the court has been abided by the department. I want to know, what are the implications of abiding by that for all the other matters that have been decided in terms of the petroleum exploration and production regulations? I'm sure that's not the only case, or not the only I'm using the wrong word here. Case is not the right word, but it's not the only application of those regulations that was implemented. And as a result, this court case, which says that the minister lacked the authority to make those regulations in the first place, what are the implications for all the other matters that have been decided under those regulations? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay.
Honourable
Malin.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good evening to the officials from the department and my colleagues in the Portfolio Committee. Chairperson, let me first welcome the presentations by the department and also applaud them for appraising us on the issues and of litigation that the department is facing. But the Chairperson, I just want to indicate one thing, that I would have loved to hear how much the department has spent on this litigation matter. Chairperson, it's not all doom and gloom in our country. Yesterday I heard that in a very long time, mining is in prison. So it's a good sign. So since the Department of DMRD is at the center of economic growth in our country, I think those news, it's good news for SA. Thank you very much. I'm just calling you on the financials of the litigation matter. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks, Chair. Good morning to honorable members and colleagues from the department. I'm partly covered in that the SFF issue, in my view, was left out. That is covered. I just want in passing to say, Chair, that the decision by the department to appeal on the issue of Lucy Ebalene and others was correct, because we don't want to continue giving a political interpretation of whether IPILRA and MPRDA conflict each other or and therefore it's necessary that it gets a legal interpretation once and for all, so that in future cases we are not found wanting and have cases similar to this one. So I would really think that that decision to appeal was correct, so that moving forward we're able to resolve other issues that may be related to this one, guided by the legal interpretation. Sitting here, I am not in a position like you are not to say yes or no, do they contradict each other or trump into one another. We can debate it the whole night, but if a legal interpretation can be sought once and for all, we'll be able to say this is what has been said by a court of law and this is how we're going to deal with other cases in the future. Thank you very much, Chair.
What did you?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, for the questions. As I've indicated, that we have a team here, both myself and DGs, we will just summarize and deal with outstanding questions. I would like to hand over to the team to respond to the questions as you know, put before us by the honorable members.
Thank you. I would like to respond on behalf of the Department of Energy in respect of the matter that was raised by the honorable member in respect of the matter of the city of Cape Town. The city of Cape Town, it is correct that it's a pending matter before the court. It's just unfortunate that the brief that we received was not here enough, as the other members indicated, to respect the possible cases, because possible cases that we have that are pending before the courts, as far as the Department of Energy is concerned, there are a lot of pending cases. So we do not get a specific brief to say you have to bring us all those matters that are up before the courts, that are still subject case, that have not been decided by the courts. So the brief that we received was that in respect of the decided cases or the matters that we have dealt with, and that we have to bring to the committee. Because if we have to bring all pending matters before the committee, probably I think they will exceed 70 matters that are pending before the committee. So I don't know whether the committee wanted the whole register of litigation matters of matters that are pending, or it wanted a specific matter. For instance, the pending the case on matter, pending matters was all concerned. The matter must be decided. So why would we just take over one matter about the 70 cases that are pending before the courts? I don't know, maybe it's a question of importance there, but there's a lot of pending matters, so I do not get the impression that the committee wanted all the pending matters to be presented as such. So, but as indicated, there's no judgment on this particular matter, it's still pending. As far as the SSF matter, I think also the DG will come in on this one. The matter specifically are related to an entity of the Department of Energy as such. So thereby it was, as far as I'm aware, it was not dealt with through the offices of the state attorney. So that's why it was not reported. I'm not sure at this stage whether the DG will want to add anything on that.
Thank you, Chair. If I may just come in on the matter that relates to the strategic stock sale. It is correct that it's a matter that is with the two entities, in particular Central Energy Fund and SFF. If the matter needs to be reported, as I have checked 2 days ago, we need to get some information from those entities, but it's not a matter that the department itself was dealing with directly in terms of the court processes. The matter was delegated to Central Energy Fund as a mother body that is in charge of SFF. The matter is in court, but it's being handled directly by itself and its legal team that was established through the guide of the minister. So, Chair, I think if you may allow us, if those details are required, surely we could be in a better position in our oversight responsibility to get those details from the SFF and the SFF group and present it to this committee in the near future. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I would respond to the TMR mineral resources component of the department cases. I think there is already a comment that has been made in respect of IPINRA, whether it runs on MPRDA or not. As you might be aware, Honorable Member, that as a department, we are responsible for the administration. Of course, the interest of communities we do take into account because we are a recurring department, and we understand in terms of our mandate that we are obliged by the law to consult with our communities. And so the matter is appealed on the basis of that fact. I think Honorable Member Yeshif has also clarified this issue. But we'll try to find a balance in terms of how do we deal with all these applications. That is why, even to date, the department did not move ahead in granting a mining right to this company, because we waited, I mean, based on those issues that were raised by community members in that area of Tolobin. And so we have taken note of the points that you have raised, Honorable Member. Yes, indeed. On other cases, the case that you have mentioned, we comply with the law. Whenever the decisions have been made, we know that it is either we appeal or we just comply with the decision. Now, what we always try to do, because we are a department of minerals, resources and energy, our mandate is to make sure that there is mining. And when you have mining, you know that you'll be able to contribute to the GDP, you'll be able to grow the economy, you'll create jobs and so forth. And so we are very much passionate about that. And so, but we understand that in protected areas, with all these court cases where the department has been challenged. Now, if you look at the Mabula case, it was more about the consultation with the interested and affected parties. But we felt that we do not need actually to proceed in appealing this judgment, and so we have abided by the court decision. And of course, the other matter is still in progress, and so we will deal with it as and when the time arrives for us to comply with whatever the decisions that would have been made. And so, of course, we are taking some lessons out of all these issues. We're internalizing all these court decisions in the department and making sure that we comply. But also, you have to bear in mind that we are a mining department. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, in relation with the Karoo case, I hear the point that the Honourable Member has raised. I think we need to comply with the court orders, the way the people have sought relief. And now, in this case, there's no reference about the other decisions that have been taken. And now, in this case, the applicant did not seek a relief for the previous decisions that have been made by the department. And so there is no reference also that has been made by the court, because the court should have also indicated that the decisions that have been taken by the department previously in granting this rights are null and void. And so there is no reference to that, as you know that the court would make such a judgment if maybe there was a relief that was sought. On the issue of the cost, we are quantifying everything. As you know that we are working with the state attorney. Now, we don't have a direct control because we wait for the state attorney to give us the statement of account. So that we can be able to process payments and so forth. And so we are still in the process of collating all this information. And so we have taken the point that the Honourable Member has raised. Those were the questions that were directed to the other component of the department. The other issues that have been raised, I think their comments, and especially the comment that has been made by the Honourable Malinga around the performance of mining, as you know that in the contribution of 3.1 of the GDP, we have actually contributed more than 1% as the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. And so we are optimistic that we will make sure that we improve from our work, whatever that we have to do. We have to make sure that we do improve. Thank you very much.
Okay. What did I noted on what did the lead is straightforward. It says current and possible case. Now, so that we can assist you, I think the question that has been asked by Honorable Malinga, which I doubt it will be easy to answer it here, on the cost implications on the court cases. Let me help you, DJ Zulu. When we met with Seth, in fact, we can say that's the only one we can talk about a figure. When we met with Seth, SFF didn't talk to the case, the case on the strategic stock. And their figure in terms of the spend so far was 20 million. And it's not 20 million spending, it's 20 million mobile. So there is a potential that 20 million can be more than, by the time the case finishes, it will be more than. What also, you see, the point at the end of the day is to look for value for the money. We don't want also to elevate money. And one of the concerns that we're having, and I must say from a child's point of view, one of the concerns we're having is that amongst their presentation was that there was 14 billion down the drain on looking for something that they couldn't find. And that's why we had a question to say, you had an entity that was indirectly on life support, but you have spent so much and just public funds, you had Total this side that is partners and they spent 2 billion rand and they discovered what they want. You had Total that would have moved and realized where they were going, they were not going to discover, and withdrew and took a different direction and got what they want. Now, that is from this committee, that's why we said, even if things were done this way, we want now things to be done straight, so that we know. So, the reason we say pending, let's look and take the case that DMR is talking about. We have to get clarity. Are you challenged? For instance, if you go to court, is the application challenging and appealing the decision of the court, or is seeking clarity from the court? From where we stand, we must be able to advise and say, but the case you are pursuing, it may not be worth pursuing. But if we're to sit as a committee and only assess cases that are done, we are actually acting like the NPA, or we must act like police officers. We are acting like detectives who committed a crime. The starting point is to ensure that the public purse, when it is utilized in a very responsible way. We must be able to get, for example, sitting here. Is there, besides the state law, and I must say this thing, I know I'm coming whatever from the weather. We must say this is open. One of the records and I'm not accusing anyone, was that some of the cases, they are taken to court deliberately. And the consequences after are that the state has to pay. I'm not saying it's happening. I'm not saying it's this department. But it's there. In fact, fortunately, the Minister of Police said so. He said some of the things that are happening were allowed to go to court, and then people at times deliberately, in inverted commas, lose the case. And then the liability of the state is to then be litigated successfully. So we have to look into those things as to the way of making money. So I think that is because the case, the matter is not, because you can't, a current and a case that is highly pending cannot be discussed in this committee. But the reasons and the basis of going through that route, at least the committee must be assessed. So that we can't be able to say, but the route you are taking, we must be able, sitting here, to see, do we have an assessor somebody will assess the case and then say, on the basis of this, take it on. So the reason we said current and pending is simply because there is a potential to spend. The last point on this thing of expenditure, where I was previously, I said, can tell you now, when people come with the budget, it's very little where you look at, you get something that says, please prove our legal, possible legal spending. You see? Every time we pass a budget, we don't look at that, is there a budget for possible litigation? You see? So I think that there must be that understanding. I think the other point, Babu Ngwen, is that the issue that is being raised is that when you apply the law, you must apply the law concurrently. You don't say, go with this one. I think that's the context that the question was raised on the IPILRA. That in as much as you apply your MPRDA sections, in the same way on environmental compliance, on the question of water and so forth, all the laws, they don't get suspended by virtue of another law. It's so unfortunate sometimes that in South Africa you have the question we must raise that, aren't we finding ourselves in a situation where another law is contradictory to the other law, but being made by the same? Because all of us must face the duty here. We bring it here. At times we don't look at what are the implications of this law that we are doing somewhere else. So I think that is the last two things I wanted to raise. And I'm doing it deliberately. If we're going with pending or current cases, I'll tell you there are two cases that are not here, but are similar. Because it will take me to ask another question. In the case of Lilimai, which is almost the same thing with what is happening, the only thing that there is death. There are people who were buried alive underground in Lilimai. But by what is playing out is no different legally for what is happening in Optima. Now, I ask this question. Don't you have a problem of two laws or two requirements of business transaction? One, when you want a license right for a mine, you apply through the MPRDA DMR. But when you operate the mine as a business, you then go through the Companies Act. I ask this question, I'm going to ask it now. Don't you think it is high time from DMRE now you consider expropriation when there is failure to comply with the right conditions granted? Because what you have in Lilimai now is that you apply your Section 11, but still people can't operate. So yourselves, you are hamstrung by the very same, and under other circumstances, brutally speaking, we just say, by the way, we do have an African exploration. You can't do this thing. The state put conditions of retrieving the bodies. You put in a person who's going to run the mine. Equally, that's the problem you have now at Optimum, what being played out by business rescue practitioners, liquidators, most of them by profession. So have you looked at making the law much more favorable for business to continue to operate? Well, I'm not sure now what's that. People have lost their jobs, you are not generating an income, you are only fighting over the mine. When the authority to issue a license rests with you. So I thought, but I know Honorable Mailam wanted to make a follow-up.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm also concerned by the fact that we're not getting the full picture of issues here. But I'd like to go back specifically to two matters. that were raised. The first is the SFF matter. And we heard that because it doesn't involve the department, they haven't presented it. And I understand that it's still before the court. But they presented other matters that, for example, the Nexa matter. It dealt with Nexa, which is a subsidiary of the department. It's an entity of the department. Similarly, the SFF is an entity of the department. So why one and not the other? So that's my first point. The second is that the SFF matter specifically references a former minister and her role in the transaction. It references Ms. Tina Jumat-Peterson, and it draws her into that whole court case. So I'm very confused as to why we would leave that out. Then, with regard to the Treasure the Karoo and Stern matter, I just want to read from the actual judgment. It says, the petroleum regulations must be set aside in their entirety, irrespective of whether PAJA or the principle of legality applies. And the following order is issued. The order of the court, I quote, is set aside and replaced with the following. The regulations for petroleum exploration and production 2015 that came into effect on 3 June 2015 in accordance with government notice R466 and government gazette 38855 are reviewed and set aside. So that means they are null and void. They have no force or effect. My question was, what happens to all the other decisions that were taken in terms of those regulations? Do they have to be reviewed? Has the department done anything to ensure that those regulations that those other applications have been dealt with correctly in terms of whatever the status quo was before those regulations came into force and effect. I'm really concerned that this matter opens the department up to enormous challenges and that you're basically sticking your heads in the sand and saying, well, no, it only applied to Treasure the Karoo and Stern. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I will ask my legal team to add if there is anything they want to add. First, the Chair, let me caution, and I'm not by any means dictating on members to make comments on any matter, but matters which are pending and of legal nature, it's always wise not to make reference to names of people, because it's a matter which we are not handling directly as a department. So I'll caution that we...
Why did you want to check?
Yeah. Okay, well.
Chair, the point of order is this. In terms of the MIDI television court case, a matter that is sub judice, we can't discuss the merits of the case. In other words, I'm not here saying whether it is right or wrong or anything like that. I can, however, refer to the facts of the case. And the facts of the case are that the former minister is implicated. And my question is, you are here giving a briefing to us as a committee, and we have a right and an expectation that you fully brief us. So to say that we can't refer to an individual, I'm sorry, that's absolutely out of order, Chair.
Okay. Yes, Chair, may I offer something? Okay,
well done. Chair,
well done. Okay, well done. That's the
chocolate
matter. But we may have
to find later on. No, Chair, I think because SFF came to present, they mentioned former minister. I was actually shocked when Honorable Mellon mentioned the name, because it did not say which minister. It said former minister, he or her. So the question is correct that maybe mentioning names may be incorrect. We rather say former minister, and then so that we are safe as a committee not to mention names, because there's no name that was mentioned by SFF. Thank you.
Chair, further point of order?
No, I'm ruling on that.
Yeah, Chair, can
I
just clarify?
I allow you to make your point of order. Wait. Honourable members, wait. There is in the response of DG's, he says he's advising or he would talk about being cautious to mention the names in a legal matter in the committee that they are not handling. I thought the matter was gonna be, we're entitled to raise any name if we feel doing so because of the immunity that we have. But what will be wrong, which you must clarify, it is not the position of the committee. It's a member in the committee that talks about the knowledge that he has. It doesn't change whether it's cautioned or not. The point, I'm not saying DG Zulu is wrong. Neither it is wrong for the person. The caution will be the in-person might be implicated wrongly when the matter is not. And the committee at this stage cannot associate itself with a view expressed in a meeting. It will only express that view when it has taken a decision to say so and so is implicated. For now, we don't have that knowledge, we don't have that information. Maybe the word caution, that is the point I would say, the word caution, it may be not a correct one to use. If I were in you, the word I would have used is that I would find it difficult to respond as an official of a department on the names being raised in the meeting. I will only respond on the matter that is being raised, which is the issue of the SFF case. Can we move on?
Thank you, Chair. I take your guide, and I must say, Chair, I will never ever dictate to any member of this committee what to say, not to say. And that's what I said from the beginning. I was just saying it's a caution, but I take your guide, Chair. In the future, I will avoid that. Now, to make a distinction between the two cases, Chair, so that also one can provide context, the NEXA matter and the SFF matter, I've indicated, Chair, that the matter that relates to the sale of historic stock was being dealt with directly with the court processes with SAF and SFF. So they are the custodian of the matter on behalf of the shareholder, and they report on it as it goes to the shareholder. However, Chair, the NEXA matter is in our roster. It's a matter that our own minister directly has been dealing with in terms of the Act. And the action that he has taken directly is the action that is empowered in terms of the Act for the action that he has taken. So it's a matter that falls within our roster, and we have been dealing with directly with the minister. So that's a distinction that I wanted to make between the two matters in terms of how institutionally are being dealt with. Thank you, Chair.
Babu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me that back to the point that the honourable member has raised, and I thought that if I try to clarify this point, I'll try to amplify myself on it, honourable member and honourable members. Yes, indeed, the court has made a ruling that the regulations are null and void. We agree with that, and we have abided by the decision of the court. Now, the point that the honourable member is raising, we may as well arrive at the same conclusion either way. if we were to take it, a decision to say that because the court has made a ruling that the regulations are null and void, and therefore all the companies that their applications have been processed and finalized or granted, then we are going to also review that decision as a department. We may be taken to task by those companies, and so which means then now we'll be back again to the court on the same matter. Now, we derive a comfort from the fact that there is no specific reference that has been made by the court in respect of the previous decisions that have been made. The court has made a decision in terms of the regulations, and so the court would have gone even further to say that all the decisions that have been taken, now the court speaks only of the regulations that are null and void. It makes no reference to the decisions that have been made by the department. And so I think it's a question of the two situation kind of in the matter that we have to deal with. And so, but as I said, that that's where we derive a comfort that there's no any specific reference that the department must then review all those applications. And so we can leave it at that point. I hear you, I hear your discomfort, and I think the chair has also amplified this point by indicating that your concern as members is the public press, and so we are very much actually careful when it comes to that as well, so that we are not taken to the court by the companies because of the decisions that we have made as a department. With your indulgence, your honorable chair, because you have raised the issue of lean mine, maybe just in passing, because I know that it's a matter of concern to you as members of this committee. I must say that the process in disposing of those assets, as you remember that we have two assets, which is Optimum, which is the main one, and also Gorenfontein. And so the process is at an advanced stage, and so we are optimistic that at least finally those employees that have been retrenched, they will be able to go back to work, because their decision was taken along the process that because of the unrest that was going on there, and so a consensus was reached with the employees to be retrenched whilst the VRPs are still busy with the mine. But that was a consensus, I mean, that was reached between the parties. But as of now, even during the course of this week, there are discussions that are taking place. There are companies that have submitted a bid, and so hopefully out of those companies we'll get a successful bidders for both two mining operations. So thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Okay, DJ, both of you. My issue, especially the mineral side, I understand what's happening in Optimus. What I was raising is in relation to your Fleming Silver, VGSA. I understand what is happening. My question is not being answered. Go and look. It says, exactly like you say, Optimum is on standstill. Amongst other things, that your PRPs were taking each other in court, even questioning each other, who has got authority. My argument will stand and say, had you had those powers, or had you had that that regulatory framework that allows you, for now, you only give a person a mining right, but when that person decides to do anything, you are nowhere to be found. You find yourself having to rely on that person telling you. So my issue, maybe when we go on the legislative process, you will understand what I'm trying to say. It says it now, if we were to have a legislation that says I give you a mining right, whatever the circumstances that happen, somebody comes in between and then says, no, I'm running the mine. Give me, I will tell you when to sell. We are saying you should have a system, whether you call it expropriation, whatever you call it, a system that allows you immediately to say, because if we had that regulatory mechanism, I can tell you now, you would have made this decision about Lily Mine, you would have made this decision about Optimum long time ago. So that is why I'm saying, let's park it, let's have a discussion to say, we shouldn't have this thing that every time there's something that in between, there are people that will never granted the right and say, because my understanding is that there are clear conditions and I agree we must comply with the other acts, other laws. So, but let's park that. The second thing is that, because I want to, there's something that happened, and I must say it in the House, to get guidance. I'm chairing, but when there is something I need, by hindsight, to also go and make it that it's a correct decision or ruling that I've made. But on the other part, that I think maybe again you must help us, because the issue of traditional authority, it seems to me even the court might be giving us, again they say don't question the law, you must ask the law. At least you've got a background in law. There seems to me to be an unclear area that it is regarded as a traditional authority area. But at some point, the traditional authority itself as an authority, it says it does not have an authority over those that are supposed to be the subject. So I don't know what does it. This issue, Honorable Miller, myself, it's from me as a chair. Is that I was sent to the secretary, can you help me? But I think I'll have to ask from the House Chair or the, not what you said. There's something, a rule that says, if you cast aspersions or somebody's implicated as a man and is a member, you must bring a substantive motion against that person. I'm saying I will need counseling to check whether that applies, one, in the committee, and if it applies, how do we rule on such matters? I will go and check because I don't have knowledge now. That's all I would ask for in writing. Because I agree that the name raised is a former minister, but is a member of the House. That is the issue I need clarity on from the presiding, the real presiding officer. Okay, honorable members, can you take tea break or stretch break? Well, there's no tea. Take stretch break and be back here. Bye. Can we take such break? Please come back at how much was give you?
10 minutes.
You want 10 minutes? Mm-hmm. Come back at 20 past.
I'm going to go to the company.
Let's say that if This thing is going to be higher because most of these companies will go with the Mr. Kalam. He is the representative of the Optimal. You know what I mean? But maybe because kind of when they are not saying that it's so very smart, it's a
good
move. I mean, I'm not saying that. But who's the most good to you? The best is the imagine. And you can't,
because
you see now, you know,
this
is a little tweet.
Yeah,
but
something changes.
Must be because
you
lose
it.
Or you lose it.
But I can't.
Because if you, let's say, 200 workers, you've contributed 200 workers on an employee to DA.
Plain yogurt's the best, healthy.
Just one of the major I pick up from the cocoon.
But that always, if you don't understand the
instruction,
don't assume.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm
Okay. Nothing bad has happened yet, so being here you might be saved from something bad, because it's a bad friend. Okay, now we'll be going to the legislative process or program. The reason we're doing this, I think we must say, and I'm I'm tempted, Babu Zulu and Babu Mkwana, to say, looking at the work that was supposed to do this committee, and the number, it's a little bit scary, but it's happened that we are here. The truth of the matter is, like, in my view, even this 2 days that we are trying, it may not be enough. But we are going to try our level best. So we must have a sense, therefore, because once there is legislation in front of us, we will not even complain about Friday, because Saturday and Sunday may also be relevant days to work. So we must know. I don't know from a committee point of view whether we can tell you, no, hold on this one. Because my fear is when one department might bring in 3 or 4 legislations simultaneously, or even 2 at the same time. I've seen the work when it comes to the legislative process. How cumbersome. Just one dealing with one. So we must have a sense of the extent. But I wanted to say, Babu Zulu, on the previous letter, and honorable member, at least we, SFF, is probably going to be, out of all the court cases that we have done to now, it may be the only one that we may have to take it. Decision, because it's going to constitute part of the report of the work we've done when we're interacting with entities of the department. So it's not gone yet. It's still going to come to this committee so that the committee will make observations and recommendations. I don't know what conclusion or decisions or recommendations will come to. When we did, because we still have to compile the report from the time we met the stakeholders to the time we visited all the entities in our interaction, we still have to make recommendations. So I'm just saying, don't say it's the last time, say, hey, I thought the matter is done. Unfortunately, it came through in our interaction. As to whether it's anchored on the department, the truth remains. Every inch of the entity, the executive account here. So we will be having a discussion in that context on that matter. Now, because we're waiting for Honorable Bilankul and Honorable Fulmaran, we can now give it to you, ODG. To take us through the report on legislative processes.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, for also allowing us an opportunity to present to you what we think could be our legislative program. And the Chair must indicate that you have already indicated that we might need more time to deal with a lot of some of the bills that we'd like to take through. It is very correct, Chair. We would like to do as much as we could for this particular administration. Chair, there is about 6 of them, and one of it relates to Minerals and Petroleum Resource Development Act, which is supposed to be page 2 there, which the department, or the then Department of Mineral Resources, introduced to Parliament. And I will ask the GDG to deal with that at the end, Chair, because it had a lot of perspectives that have been alluded to and some changes
that are being proposed, and to give a proper context at the end of it, I would request that DG Ntobeko to deal with that. From an energy perspective, Chair, if we go to page 11, in the interest of time, as I've already indicated that during the fifth term, Chair, we intended to do about five of the bills. Unfortunately, I wouldn't like to use all the type of excuses that may have been challenges and constraints in dealing with them. But, Chair, we have experienced problems, and we hope that in this administration we'll be able to effectively handle them. Chair, as they appear on page 11, you have Energy Regulator Amendment Bill, Gas Amendment Bill, Petroleum Products Bill, National Nuclear Regulator Amendment Act, and National Radioactive Waste Bill. Chair, if I were to go straight to the first one, which is on slide 13, Chair, in terms of National Regulator, just to provide a status of where we are, Chair, and what are the possible timelines that we have envisaged to take these processes forward. National Energy Regulator Act Bill, which is, in terms of its strategic focus, is meant to promote efficient regulation of the energy sector with an intended impact of reducing energy prices. It is our view, Chair, having done some analysis on this one, that we may be able to make submissions of the bill to Cabinet on the final quarter of 2019 financial year, and most probably to Parliament on the first quarter of 2020-21 financial year. Of course, Chair, as you know, there are always constraints in these processes, but you are able to deal with them as expected. It must also be indicated that this legislation was presented to Cabinet and approved based on condition that the role of the review board is played by the Minister. So this has created to some extent some conflict of interest which we needed to deal with, being informed by the fact that the Minister requires the concurrence of NERSA in the various regulatory determinations under Section 34 of the ERA. And a further consultation then was requested with the stakeholder department and the ESET cluster to deal with that. So the consultation process at this stage did not yield to what was the desired results, and we'll continue to pursue the matter and make sure that we still meet our targets. The second one, Chair, relates to the Gas Amendment Act, which is the review of the bill which require amendment of the existing regulations. The strategic focus of this bill, Chair, is to promote efficient, competitive and responsive economic infrastructure, inclusive economic growth and leveraging of available gas resources. This bill will basically, in terms of its impact, promote the development of gas infrastructure, which is an area in our energy space that is beginning to gain momentum, and as such, the regulatory framework plays a very important role in the management of the gas infrastructure. It's our view, Chair, that we may be able to make a submission of the bill to Cabinet on the final quarter of 2019-20 financial year, and probably make a submission to Parliament on the first quarter of 2020-21 financial year. There are some challenges insofar as this particular bill, particularly because the Department does not have control over some of the external processes that are involved in terms of consultation, particularly with reference to the state law advisor. We all know that they have a lot of work they do, and at times they do okay when there's no capacity to handle some of our submissions. However, in terms of the status of this particular bill, the NERSA report was issued and the bill is currently with the state law advisor for final pre-certification. And once it's issued, then the consultation with ESET cluster will be attended to before the final certificate is issued. The fourth one, Chair, relates to the Petroleum Products Bill in terms of the new regulations, with a special focus on promoting efficient, competitive, responsive economic and infrastructure growth and leveraging available resources. This will contribute effectively in terms of its impact to economic growth, skills development, and in particular the transformation agenda in terms of the oil industry, which must increase participation of historical disadvantaged South Africans. And we all know that in this industry particularly, there is a very strict limitation in terms of how
the historical disadvantaged people have not been exposed into this, and part of this group intends to do that. We therefore hope that we'll be able to make our submission to Cabinet by the second quarter of 2020-21 financial year, and probably make a date, a submission of a date to Parliament on the final quarter of 2021 financial year. There are some little challenges here, Chair, because some of the initial proposed amendments were required to be effected. However, this bill, in terms of its status, we are busy revising it, and only this is on the advice of our internal legal services, Chair. Chair, the next one relates to National New Plan Regulator Amendment Bill, our NNR. As we all know, that the most important focus of this bill is to provide the strengthening of National Nuclear Safety Regulator as the authority of nuclear safety matters, which is a very important institution that falls within the Department of Energy, and its impact contributes towards protection of the people and the environment from ionizing radiation. And this is also an international obligation that we have to make sure that we comply in terms of South Africa being a signatory to the National Atomic Agency. The bill is proposed to make sure that we submit it to the Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation Unit of Presidency for review, and we hope that the date for submission to Cabinet will be planned once all public consultations have been concluded, which is the end of 2020. And we assume, Chair, that once all consultations are dealt with sufficiently, the legislation process will be finalized, and then the necessary submission will be made, and once the state law advisor has also been assisting us with the pre-certification. So it has not been easy to provide the exact dates on the basis of the consultations that are ending at the end of March. The last one, Chair, before we deal with the one on minerals, relates to National Radioactive Waste Fund Bill. As we have as you may know, Chair, that we established this institution as the department, but some of the key things that are required to be dealt with, they require effective management of the funds. This bill then intends to make sure that the National Radioactive Waste Management Fund is established, which will provide funding of the functions and activities of the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute to provide for the financial and for the manner in which the fund is to be governed, managed, administered, and controlled. And again, Chair, as I've also indicated earlier on NNR, that part of the National Radioactive Waste, there is an inherent requirement as an obligation that we have as a country to make sure that we clearly outline how we are managing the radioactive waste that we are exposed to because of the nuclear that we are involved with, particularly with the current operation. So this bill then, Chair, would like to contribute towards protection of the people and the environment from ionizing radiation. At this point in time, Chair, the socio-economic impact assessment phase one report has been submitted to the Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation Unit of Presidency for final review. The bill has been submitted to the State Law Advice as well for pre-certification. It is planned again that once all public consultation has been concluded end of March, we will be in a better position to give a specific date in terms of when can we submit the bill to Cabinet and to Parliament appropriately. Currently, the working on the socio-economic report for phase two is undergoing. So, Chair, from an energy perspective, those are some of the bills that we really intend that we deal with during the full administration, and some of the possibilities that we have stated and the constraints that are associated with it. We'll do our level best, Chair, that during this administration, we perform better. As I've made a disclaimer from the beginning, that in the field administration, our performance on these bills was quite a challenge. But I wouldn't like to get into those details. We are much more aware of what has been happening, and we try to do that. Chair, as we conclude with the last one for your consumption, I'd like to ask the world to reflect on developments that have since occurred when we started this new process on the MPRDA about where we are and how we intend
going forward from dealing with this petroleum bill as well. Thank you, Chair. With your permission, I'll hand over to the Chair.
Morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and colleagues. I must say up front that we also took a view that we will just provide a summary of the bills because we are doing all of them. Because if we were to go into detail, it would take us a whole day in terms of the nitty-gritties that are involved in the bill. But just by way of background, honourable members will appreciate that currently petroleum resources upstream are currently regulated through the MPRCA, which covers both the minerals and petroleum side. So in 2016 we introduced a bill in Parliament with enhanced provision on both the minerals and petroleum side. But the bill took long in Parliament without it being finalized, and it then lapsed in terms of Rule 332 sub Rule 1 of the National Assembly Rules. While it automatically lapsed with the rising of the fifth Parliament in terms of Rule 333 sub Rule 1, Minister had also exercised Rule 334, which allows him to withdraw a bill, but before the withdrawal was closer to finality in Parliament than he ended up in terms of 3331. And we saw that as an opportunity really for us to then separate the provisions of mining from those of petroleum, reason being that we thought that for the longest time, petroleum resources or the regulation of petroleum resources upstream has always been an appendage to mining law. And that sort of limits the development of this sector with such a huge potential. This is why we are now currently working on separating the two, developing the petroleum bill, but in the same bill, we will have a schedule at the end, which will then repeal the provisions in the MPRCA, and the mineral provision will apply as they currently are until such time that there is a need to work on the amendments on the mining side of regulation. Just briefly, on the purpose of the bill, as I indicated, we are separating the provisions and repealing the mining provisions. But also we want to strengthen the regulation of petroleum resources upstream. I know this touches on the shale gas issue, which was raised on the legal cases, and we're looking at this bill to also provide for regulation of shale gas as one of the resources through this bill. But also we want to create a conducive environment for investment and growth, as well as job creation. We also are entrenching the principle of secrecy of tenure. Just like we are dealing with minerals, we want to ensure investors that they will have security of tenure through this law. One of the things that we are also working on with VIGA, with this bill, is state participation. And we've looked into state participation in detail, we've benchmarked against a number of countries and we've seen how the state participates, and we looked at where the potential areas for the South African state-owned company to then participate in the petroleum space. We believe that is very important for the future supply of our own resources as a country. Next slide, please. On the offset, honourable members will appreciate that currently in the MPRCA, we're saying that the resources belong to all of us, South Africans. and the state just holds them in custody on behalf of all of us. We're going through, we're carrying that principle through to this bill, but also promoting equitable access to ensure that those who were previously excluded are not excluded in this dispensation. And economic growth, of course, is at the center of it. We also want to encourage and promote national development of these resources. That bullet speaks very much closely to the gap amendment bill that DG Zulu spoke about just now, in the sense that we said and looked at, if downstream there's legislation being developed for the movement of gas and petroleum products, other petroleum products, but upstream there's no driver, because we need to have a finger from upstream to downstream. So that comes in very handy in terms of ensuring that there's alignment between what happens upstream and downstream, because we will have those, we can have those that infrastructure downstream sitting there being a white elephant if there's no activity upstream. So it's very important that we ensure that alignment. But one other thing, we want to facilitate the acquisition of petroleum geotechnical data. Currently, the Shona Basin in South Africa is a designated authority in terms of the NPRCA to regulate and manage petroleum data upstream for the country. But because of the lack of or the slow pace or slow progress as far on activities upstream, we don't have much data. So this bill will seek to promote and open up opportunities for investors upstream, and then the country can be in a position to have this geotechnical data that we currently do not have. Now, like I said, we just listed certain issues without really going into detail on the bill. One of the things we're looking at in the bill is what are the contract types that are prevalent in the petroleum space compared to other countries that we looked at and benchmarked against. We've looked at Norway, which is one of the leading countries. We've looked at what they are doing in Ghana, countries like Ghana, Nigeria. Nigeria was more important for us in the sense that we had to know and learn the what not to do, if I may say. And best practice, countries like Norway, we are looking at Qatar. In the next month or so, we'll be sending a team to Norway. We're also looking and talking to quite a number of other countries and doing desktop research on what they are doing. But what we saw during our benchmarking exercise is that concession contract, which is what we currently have in South Africa, is prevalent elsewhere in the world. Production sharing contracts and service contracts are also prevalent, and we thought we could use those models as well. Production sharing, as the word, the name says, it's sharing on production, where you would find that we issue a right to an investor or a private company, and they partner with the state, and there's an agreement on the actual sharing of the production, the actual sharing of the oil. But in some cases, you find that contracts are such, they are concluded such that there's sharing in profits. But mainly, if it's production, it's production. With service contracts, it's usually where we issue a right. And either the right is held 100% by the state-owned oil company, and the investor does all the technical work, and then they get paid for their services with whatever profit or markup that would have been agreed on upfront. Now, the decision on what type of contract we will go with will rest on a number of factors, such as the location of the block on offer, whether it's conventional or unconventional resource, the maturity and the national interest. When we say location of the block, I'll give an example of Bulfrida, that block where Total recently made a huge finding. Remember, we recall that a few years ago, Total moved into that space and they started with their drilling, but their drill rig failed because of the weather conditions. The winds are too harsh in that area, and it's a deep sea resource that they're looking at. So those are the factors that would inform what sort of contract we enter into with an investor. And now, maturity of the block, maturity in the sense that do we have the geotechnical data up front? Do we know, have we done enough seismic surveys? Like, I know currently Petroleum South Africa Agency has done some 2D seismic surveys which give us some indication of what is found where. But in cases where 3D seismic surveys have been done, then that gives us sort of better value in terms in exploration terms. So that would also determine what type of contract you enter into. For example, where you've done a 3D seismic, you can easily enter into a production challenge contract on whatever basis. But also issues of security of supply for the country. I've just written the Petro SA feedstock, because Petro SA is currently the state-owned oil company. So we're also saying with this bill, we must not miss the opportunity of ensuring that we look after our own sectors of supply. Now, on BBBE participation, we're proposing 10% on commercial terms. And we're also proposing that the bill empowers minister to reserve blocks for previously disadvantaged with relaxed requirements such as state participation, which is carried, which we're proposing will be carried. The bill also empowers ministers to develop a petroleum resources charter to pursue transformation imperatives for the transformation agenda. We thought we do not want to miss that opportunity if that's possible. Kaya? On government take, we are proposing 20% carried interest for the state to be applicable to exploration, both exploration and petroleum and production rights. Members would appreciate that before companies go into exploration, they would have done desktop studies, they would have invested in all sorts of things. And at that early stage, we're not threatening them with carrying the state. But at exploration and production, we're proposing 20% carried state interest. And this is in line again with the benchmarking that we've done. We also went, I forgot to mention, we also went to Angola and benchmarked them, because they are so state-owned mining petroleum company, Sonangol. They call it Sonangol. Sonangol is sort of operating along the same line of having state, having a carried interest with private investors, but also having specific blocks reserved for the state, for the future supply for the country. Then, since it's carried interest, we also want him to make provision for cost recovery from the development of the resource. This is similar to the provision we have in the charter that we gazetted in September last year. And we say we will look at different models. We have economists in the department who have done a number of models for state participation. So we are going to strengthen the work on those models, and then by the time we finalize the bill, then we have research and evidence-based models so that we don't just stand back to say 20% based on just the figure thrown in the air, but we want it to be evidence-based. Provision is also just for, I think this is just a management issue and ensuring participation, like real participation in the operation, which is one of the things, lessons in fact we've taken from mining, to say having representation on the board and having representation at the actual operation is critical. So you don't just hold shares and you sit somewhere and not know what exactly is happening in the company. You get told whatever you're told and you're supposed to take it as it comes. I've spoken about minister being empowered to reserve blocks. I won't repeat that. Now, let me say, Honourable Chair and members up front, this slide I'm going to talk to, provisions on these issues will not be in this bill because it's money bill issues in terms of the Constitution. But we are just sharing with you what has come out of our benchmarking exercise, which is what we are busy advising National Treasury on to consider. So I'm just putting that caveat up front. Anything to do with taxes will not be in the box. It's a manifold issue. I'll move to bullet number three. Royalties based on profits currently range between 0.5 and 5%. This is the current government take in South Africa. The Royalty Act says a range. They calculate between 0.5% to 5%. And based on the economic model that we've ran, based on that a range for royalties, it could take us up to 10 years before we start receiving tax revenue if you model a project based on the fiscal terms that are there currently. One other critical issue, Honorable Chair, that we would like the committee also to note, and it's an issue we are raising with Treasury. South Africa currently has exploration uplift of 200%. Exploration uplift in terms of Section 10 of the Income Tax Act basically means that if a private company is granted a production right, they spend 10 rand on exploration, they get 20 rand back from SARS. That's a 200% uplift we are talking about. Then there are development uplifts, which are set at 150%. It basically means for development, they spend 10 rand, SARS gives them back 15 rand. The math speaks for itself here. I need not say more. We are saying to National Treasury, while we're developing this deal, let us look at the fiscal terms that we currently have and look at where the benefit for the country is. Because the way things are currently, government take on current fiscal terms is really, I don't know what the issue first is. Okay, let's move. Again, looking at the government take, now this is still based on benchmarking and research that we've done. There is something called a production bonus in the petroleum space. A lot of these developed petroleum countries apply this. It's a once-off bonus payable upon the issuing or granting of a right. How it gets determined and calculated, other countries put it at 1% of the value of the total value of the project. We are proposing 0.07%. Just as an incentive, we are saying the 0.03 is an incentive because we are new, we don't have data, a lot of data up front, we have minimal data. We're also proposing an average production bonus, which internationally is at 0.1, as well as the petroleum rent, resource rent tax. The PRRT is a super profit tax. It only applies during a cyclical boom. This again is standard practice internationally. We've done international benchmarking on this. Okay. Let me just say, Honorable Chair, we are sharing with the committee on these fiscal issues which will not necessarily be in this bill, for the committee to note that these are the issues we are taking up with Treasury. In fact, when we sent a team to Nigeria on this benchmarking exercise, they actually shared with them that it took them about 7 to 8 years because to develop their petroleum bill properly, because they had to overhaul and look at a number of other affected pieces of legislation regulating the petroleum space. They also had to look at their fiscal terms. By way of concluding, Honorable Chair, maybe before I conclude, currently, this draft bill has been sent to the state attorney for pre-certification, and it's scheduled for tabling at the next business cluster next month, and then cabinet, and we are looking at bringing the final bill to parliament by quarter four of 2019-2020. But in conclusion, I don't think there's a question about whether the petroleum sector is a potential game changer or not. There is a fact. And we are saying that the passing of this bill is a critical step for the development and growth of this sector in South Africa. And we believe we really suppressed this sector for a while, and we need to use this instrument to really unlock that potential. And really, post-passing of this bill, it will call for a major shift in the way we do business. I always argue with colleagues that it probably is time that we start seeing South African viewing South African government as a business entity. And once we begin viewing South African government as a business entity, then we will understand and be able to unlock the opportunities that we still have to grow our economy. I know that, Chair, at times when we engage with stakeholders, particularly on petroleum, and maybe if I may isolate shale gas, when we say we need so many billions to develop this sector, we need a billion rands to drill just one hole, some people are quick to say, no, South Africa can't afford that, it's too costly. I always argue, I believe personally that the question we should be asking is not how much it's going to cost us, but let's ask ourselves, what is the cost of not doing it? On that note, Chair, I would like to thank you.
Okay. The problem you are telling us about the bill that has been coming, and it's coming here. It will never go anywhere if it didn't pass here. So it's like traffic cops, when they know that there's only one road to your place, they just wait for you there. We will wait. I can see the way you are polishing it. But before I give honorable members of the what it takes, please, can I advise you? Let me use a very, I don't want to say let me caution. Let me say, can I advise you? Check whether what is a procedural issue, so that I can see whether, you see, let me start where you said basis of the thing. I'll read for you. 334 says the person in charge of a bill introduced in the assembly may withdraw the bill at any time before the second reading of the bill is decided. Now, the bill was 2014,
eh? Yes,
from 2013. Yes, no. We put in the House, it went 2014, and there was a second reading. It went to the NCOP, then to the President. Then the President retained the bill with reservations. Two of those reservations related to the National Assembly. Two. And the whole bill in its totality was referred to the NCOP. Now, the NA has done with the bill in relation to that initial process of, the first question will be, who, according to this definition, who is the person in charge? One might say the person in charge is the presidency, or the president now, because it has gone out of the department, it's in the president. So it's the president who brought it to parliament. Now the question is whether can the minister then withdraw? Two, can you withdraw the bill in the National Assembly when it is in the NCOP? That is your rule 33334. Rule 3331 says all bills introduced in the assembly and which on the last sitting day of a session of the assembly appear on the order paper for first or second reading last at the end of that day unless the assembly decides otherwise. Now I can guarantee you sitting here that bill was never on the order paper of the assembly. So that's why I'm saying, so that you are definitely sure you don't get stuck on the procedure. On the procedure. Three, I would say for reference purposes, try and check what do the rules of the NCOP say. Maybe the rules of the NCOP, because I don't see how you would bring in a separate bill when you have not exhausted the original amendment bill. There are two things then you have to do. That's my assumption on that bill, is to declare it null and void, no longer relevant, and I think you can only do it from the NCOP. If that process of the NCOP may not have a withdrawal or elapsed clause, there should be a way then where it may have to refer it back to the NA. I'm just saying, depend how you get the advice. Then at that point, I think it will then, where the NA will then be given, may have a right to declare the bill to have lapsed or to have been withdrawn. For now, when I look, I understand me, at least DG Mkwena is a lawyer. I'm a bushman, law mechanic. So if you know those of our mechanic, Basilukshi, I'm the one. Don't ask me for a certificate of Candy Water, but what I know is that I know where he's wrong. Now, I can only advise from an eye point of view, not a scientific or a theoretical point of view, to say, my view, if I were to ask to be straight, if it needs to be sit with the committee staff of the NCOP and maybe legal service, I don't know, you sit with them, they take you through. So that, because I don't want to speak on the contents of the intentions that you have and so forth. You may get stuck from the word book, you see. And I don't want, by the time you go, you bring it in Parliament, you get stuck from the point that the rules of Parliament don't even allow that the bill can be, if they can be another one. So that, I thought, I don't know, but I hope when you look at it, in my view, you must look at it in that context. I think that is at that level where I would leave. But I think in terms of the substantive issues and the intentions, I don't think we can run away from dealing with that. But the last thing I wanted to say on this thing, I'm not disputing Petro SA and so forth. But we must look at the, it's filed by the department. One of the things we raise is that in the restructuring that some of us feel it might be necessary in the department, we might have to look at different areas. For instance, the exploration process with what you have now, you know what I'm talking about, with what you have now, you may have first to deal with that part. Put it crudely, simple, where do you want to locate exploration? You know what I'm talking about. So, including the custodianship. So I'm not saying we'll do away with some of the things, but those are good things. I don't think there's... But let me know, I just thought I must deal with the procedural matters on the rules of Parliament. Honourable members, let me take Honorable Zungula, Honorable Mailam, and Honorable Bumaran.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I want to welcome the presentation. Mine, it's two quick questions. The first one is, from a thinking or principle point of view, you find that many a times we have good ideas or good views as to what needs to happen in order to improve the lives of South Africans. But on an implementation point of view, things just go the other way. Now, is it not maybe prudent to somewhat take lessons on how the previous bills were conceptualized, how they can best work for the country, and how the failure was in terms of the implementation? Maybe there could be what you call an inclusion part of the bill to address the failure of the bills to be actually be fully implemented so they can realize the objectives. Then the second question is regarding the benchmark that you've done. I heard you spoke a lot about Angola, but in my view, perhaps I might not have enough information. The best performing countries in this regard are mostly the Arab states, where the natural resources are for the benefit of the countries. Now, versus Angola, versus those countries, would it not be much better to aim for where we've seen what you call the natural resources working in the best interest of the people, rather than somewhat focusing on the Angola? I may be wrong, but according to my understanding, the Arab countries currently are the leading countries in terms of making sure that the natural resources of those countries do benefit the country as well as the people. Thank you.
Chairperson, first let me thank the department for the heads up on the legislative program. I think there's clearly still work that needs to be done with regard to preparing these various pieces of legislation for tabling in the House. And I just want to say, I think it would be premature to start digging into the different aspects of the bills until such time as we actually have a draft before us. You know, it's very difficult to comment on what works and what doesn't work while a bill is still being drafted. Once it's here in front of us in written format, we can then start making comment on the various provisions. My only question was, and I might be asking this to the wrong department, because it was stated clearly up front as a caveat that the whole taxation and finance part belongs with Treasury. But my only question is, are you looking at all of those, or some of those in different circumstances, or, you know, I'm trying to get an idea of the different options that you have there. Are you looking at putting all of those in and saying, right, you will comply with A, B, C, D, E, F, G, or A, or B, or C, depending on what we decide when the time comes? Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I also welcome the presentations, and you have already stated the question that deals with procedure. However, I need to mention that I find the MPRDA bill, the presentation thereof is progressive, apart from what the procedure would be. Given the opportunity that a number of things will be reviewed, and what comes out of it is resonates with what the ruling party's manifesto looks like. In that sense, I regard it as progressive. On page 7, there's the National Energy Regulatory Amendment Bill. And then on the last two columns there, it's more about consultation. And then there's where we speak about the create a conflict that led to the minister. And at the bottom of it, it says that further consultation process was requested with the stakeholder department. So it means it's departments that are within government. And then on the status of it, the consultation process did not yield a positive response from the interested parties. Now those interested parties and the departmental stakeholders, is it the same people or is it outsiders? And then on the last part, what were the issues? And given the difficulties, what do we envisage to do differently if it's not the same people? As a committee in that regard, what would be the assistance that would be required from us given the work within the department and the committee? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I forgot to ask one quick question, and that is, given the vacuum that has been created by the review and setting aside of the petroleum regulations, what is being done to sort that out as a matter of urgency?
Okay, you can answer, but the future is the future, but you can answer if you want to answer the future. I will not stand on your way, but the future is the future. Okay.
Yeah, maybe we should start with the future. Honorable members will appreciate that these regulations related to shale gas specifically, and the decision of cabinet at that time instructing us to develop the rig was for a simple reason, that South Africa has never exploited shale gas. We do not have a regulatory framework for the exploitation of shale gas. So we will go back to what cabinet said we must do. We will be developing the regulations. We are working on that committee. The judgment specifies that there is a hydraulic fracturing committee. So we are continuing as a committee to work with water and sanitation and FIA. We have to, because there's a vacuum in law, there's no provision for the regulation. But also, now that you've asked this question, let's address what you were probably concerned about earlier on. Remember that when Cabinet decided on the regulations in 2012, Cabinet also gave us an instruction to process any applications we've received for shale gas in the we can process and conclude in the exclusion of fracking. So we had not granted any rights for fracking. Bundu Shell and I can't remember the other one are still pending. We have to be careful and be responsible about it. There was no way we would issue rights when there's no legal framework in place to regulate that. On the fiscal terms, maybe let me take Honorable Mayhem's questions and finish with them. On the fiscal terms, what we are saying is we've looked at what is the current government take on petroleum resources. And we're saying this is the current these are the current fiscal terms as we have them today, as the law stands. So we're not prescribing, we will not be prescribing to Treasury to say put this, don't put that, or take this. Or we are saying, can we look at the fiscal terms for this sector in their entirety? And then Treasury would advise and work on that as the competent people in terms of the constitution. And we take the comment about members being able to comment better when they have the door before them. Honorable Zungula, past failures, well, we're working from the basis of, let me say, first the Sukor, then Minerals Act, then MPRCA, and we're looking at other pieces of legislation as well as we do this work. But on the benchmarking, you might have missed that I did say that we've also looked at countries like Norway and Qatar. Qatar Petroleum being the OICO for that country. We're looking at them. We have a team that we're sending to Norway in a month or so. So we are looking at the bigger countries for best practice, really. it's not only the African countries that we're looking at as we benchmark. And then I think lastly, just to say, Chair, I've noted that it's been an interesting journey with this legal technicality argument between ourselves, some people in Parliament and the Presidency and the State Attorney. Amongst ourselves, we've agreed that when we meet the State Attorney next week, actually, for them to give us the pre-certification as well, they will also give us a legal opinion. We've asked for that, to say give us a legal opinion, because amongst ourselves, our legal teams have been arguing back and forth on this. It's just a technical legality. It's a legal technical issue, really, which I'm quite positive that we will resolve at our meeting next week amongst the teams. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Take my advice. Take my advice. Let me tell you. The state law advisors, right? They were party to this and it still went wrong. So, I don't want you to have put your trust. Can I ask you, do it simple, even if you ask for that. At the end of the day, it's going to come to Parliament.
Yes.
And Parliament is the NA and the NCOP. You'd rather be misled or be given a correct, misinterpreted legal opinion by the people who will be working on the bill. Because the state law advisors will not help you on the procedures of Parliament. That I can guarantee you. They will interpret to you. For instance, if not even the chair, leave the chairs and the ourselves. Just get the secretary, and if possible, to bring in legal service, Parliament legal service. Or ask them that this is the intention. Can they advise you what to do? Because you have got this thought, and based on that, they can consult with legal services and tell you and advise you what procedure to have. The reason I'm saying it, don't want you to go too far and be told, no. You know, when you carry this thing, you said, there's that lady who talks so nice. I remember had when you take the navigator. If you open on your phone, I've never had a man giving directions. But sometimes he tends to make a U-turn. And when you realize where you are, the U-turn on its own is not going to be a good advice. So don't go until you are told make a U-turn. My advice is that once you are working, there's nothing wrong to work on the modalities and your intentions of what you want. Remember, and I must give you, if I were to give you a background, when that bill came back when the president had not signed it, it stood for how long? What I know, it came in April, ne? And it came in January. We dealt with it in May, if I'm not mistaken. Only in May and May, June, it went to the House and then to the NCOP. You know what was the dispute? Was what, which routes to follow. So I can see it's a bill that can make all of us lost. So as you move, my advice is that do them simultaneously, so that by the time you are supposed to go, you know, you don't then start afresh on the procedure. By the time maybe you finish your stuff, you might say, if it is, that's why I made that example. Because scheduling in Parliament, if it's going to go to the NCOP, even for the NCOP to give you an opportunity to attend to it, if it says withdraws, you first have to apply to withdraw it, and then they will have to bring it back to the House, to the National Assembly. That is a process on its own. So by the time maybe you come in, you said I listened to you, said if last quarter of 2019, 2020, the potential is that, I hate to be a bad prophet, the potential could be that by that time, it will be the time we are deciding if it has to go back to the NCOP, it might be the time it is scheduled to be withdrawn, if it is withdrawn, or to be declared to have lapsed, whatever the option it is. But the sooner you do this one, maybe by early next year, I don't see it happening between now with the program of parliament. I don't know NCOP. But even if NCOP can do it within now, if it has to come back to the NA, be ready that you can only, earliest will be the time you say you want to bring in the other proposed bill. So I just want to advise on that. Honourable members, it being the case as it may, thank you for facing your
chair. The question, I don't think the question.
Oh, the one. Oh, sorry. Okay. This one is referring to
the
party. Energy section. Yeah.
Energy. Mr. Japan, I will handle that matter.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair, and all the members. If I respond to the question on this on slide number 13 about the National Energy Regulator, maybe starting by apologizing, it's not clear as to what the status is there. So, but what we were trying to communicate is that in summary, the bill seeks to create a two-tier governance structure similar to the Competition Commission and the Competition the Tribunal in order to address the governance issues within the energy regulator. So what then happened was that there was a cabinet decision to make the chairperson of the review board the Minister of Energy, which would be inconsistent with the principle around managing the conflict, because the minister participates with the regulator on certain matters under the law to concur. So there's lots of provisions that require the minister and the regulator to agree or to concur, and therefore you could not have the same minister being responsible, you know, respect of an appeals process. So that has since been addressed. There is a solution around it. Honorable Romarans, the issue here in terms of the communication, or rather what we have communicated here about the status, is that it went back to the cluster, and the cluster did not agree that there could be any way that the minister would be the appeal authority. So it has since been addressed, and it will then come back, or I'll go back to cabinet and hopefully find its way into the portfolio committee.
Okay. Honourable members, the DG of the department, thank you very much for the report and presentation, and as I said, I'm told there is a new bond baby in the house today. And is that true?
That is true.
No, there's a new baby in the house. I can see it, that he wanted everyone to see that he's born. Happy birthday to Honorable Bornaran. Thank you for enjoying your birthday with us, with the legislation and conflict. May you have a greater one now beyond that. Honorable members, thank you very much. See you on Tuesday.